Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Well, welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship home, and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about the journey of recovery from alcoholism. But to start the meeting off, we thought we'd start with a reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a chapter entitled How It Works, and it outlines the program, the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it goes, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic in the chapter to the agnostic and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that prop- probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and C, that God could and would if he was sought. That's a reading out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the chapter How It Works, outlining the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We have some members in who are going to share now, so we'll start off with the sharing. And Yolanda, would you like to share?
Thank you. Hi, I am Yolanda, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Yolanda.
I arrived in New Zealand in 2004 as an immigrant, and I had any hopes of starting a new life in New Zealand. When I think back to 2004, I would never have thought that that new life would have been made possible through AA. And I am eternally grateful for the role that Alcoholics Anonymous has played in transforming my life. Mine is a simple story of addiction, but it was my addiction was arrested in time. I started drinking to take the edge off of a stressful day at work, and it started with one day, and then it continued, and then was 2 days, and then 3 days, and so forth. And it wasn't long before I wanted to take the edge off of a whole week, and then that slow, insidious downward spiral began that ended in a rock bottom that I've come to realize wasn't a very low rock bottom. It wasn't a rock bottom like my dad's, where he nearly lost just about everything. Family, nearly lost his job, and so forth. But he woke up just in time and came into the program about 40 years ago. God rest his soul, he worked the program, and I have that example. Neither was it a rock bottom like my brother's rock bottom, and he had lost everything. He had lost his life and died in a died in blackout about 18 months ago. So I have those examples, and I'm thankful to God that, as sad as it is to say, but it was because of that, because of what I've grown up in, I just realized that I could so easily go either my dad's route or I could go my brother's route and, you know, destroy my life completely. And so I came into the rooms, and my first meeting was at a northern area assembly, Coromandel Township, where I made the decision that maybe it's best I do not go to an AA meeting, but in actual fact go to the Al-Anon workshop, because I felt that I was better suited. I met the criteria more for Al-Anon, having been a child of an alcoholic. And of course you can note the denial in that at the very first meeting. No sooner, and I started going to some Al-Anon meetings, but it wasn't long before I got into a bit of trouble with Al-Anon, and I realized that I needed to get my act together, and that I needed to go to the AA meetings, because I had addiction in my DNA. My journey then started in 2010, November 2010, and I had 3 AA sponsors, got myself a sponsor, and started to work this program, did the 12 steps. And realized that this design for living does work. You know, I can, as the big book says, it's a suggestive program that has worked for many, and I can confirm that it's worked for me, okay? The AA family, not a perfect family, but they, yeah, became my people, you know, whom I... Sad to say, in the initial, when I went to that meeting, I did kind of look down on the A's, and I thought, hell no, not my family. But I can say, as I look back right now, 7.5 or so, close to 8 years later, that it's a wonderful family. It's a family that has made healing possible in my life. I did service, was a little bit reluctant to do service initially, but got into it. And I've grown spiritually, and I'm, you know, forever thankful to God for that, and to His, to His, to God, to AA, to the servants in AA who serve, who serve humbly, who serve willingly, particularly the old timers as well, you know, who have gone ahead and made it possible for us to have and established a program that we could come and find an answer to the mess that, that our lives have become. So what for me began as a new life as an immigrant in February 2004 has been made possible through the work that is done, that has been through AA. Life is good today. It's not, it's good to have a program to go to. It's good to have a set of tools that can make life possible. I never had that set of tools. I never had a good understanding how to deal with life, how to treat life on life's terms. I was reading in one of the daily reflections 2 weeks ago, and this line struck me. It's good, it's fun to watch myself grow. And I sat in that meeting and I thought, yeah, it is actually fun to watch myself grow, because I do see growth. I do see myself being able to cope so much better, particularly in the workplace, particularly in areas such as, you know, my relationships with family, my relationships with friends. This is the best thing that could have happened to me, and I can say that, and I can confirm that this is a design for living that does work. It is working for me right now. I look forward to the rest of my years, God willing, in AA, continuing to do service, continuing to spread that word that AA is a program that alcoholics need. That's all. Thanks.
Thanks, Yolanda. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM, and we have members of the fellowship on this morning sharing their experience, strength and hope about the journey of recovery from alcoholism. And to continue on with the sharing this morning, Alan, do you want to share?
Thank you very much, Steve. Hi everybody, my name is Alan and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Alan.
And I can say that with pride now, whereas in the past I never would have even admitted to being an alcoholic. I'll go back to the beginning. Before I ever picked up a bottle or a drink, I held the addict's personality gene, and that showed, and I didn't learn about this until I entered into a treatment centre. I like to refer to it as the Academy of Addicts, because it's an anonymous centre. And anyway, for 4 months, with the thought I was going to fail it and not make it through, I journeyed my way through that, and I am so grateful for the fact that I did, because that helped me realise that my alcoholism wasn't something that I wouldn't admit to, because I saw it as being a blight on humanity, or I even got called you're nothing but a waste of space on the face of the planet one day when I was drunk, and I laughed, thought that was really funny, and wondered why I hadn't thought of that myself to deliver to somebody else. But in my most active days, which was all of 40 years plus, I thought nothing was wrong with that. I just thought I enjoyed drinking, and I needed to drink to get some courage to fit into society, to fit in with groups of friends, and even to work. And towards the end of it, that was 24 hours a day, just about, if I could have, if I didn't pass out in between time. Everything I did was to do with alcohol. So I cared about nobody else, anything else, doing anything. The only thought on my mind was alcohol. And I planned the day after that, and the day after that, and the day after that, to make sure there was always going to be a supply of that. Dare it ever did run out, then I would resort to other drugs and other means of escaping. And I did this as a little child. And I felt I didn't belong as a little child. I'm adopted. That's not to blame for the reason that I picked up bottles and alcohol and anything like that. But I created for myself a little fantasy world, and I would escape to this world. And if I didn't fit in, I would then change my personality, and I became an actor. I would act my way through life, and I would present to other people what I thought they wanted to see. So in doing that, I lost Alan a long, long time ago. I thought I'd found him when I was about 10, 11 years of age, and started to rebel against mum and dad and about against the rules and against school and against church and everything. And I found a little friend in my mother used to drink blackberry nip, and I love blackberries. So when she wasn't around, I would get into the booze cabinet and have a little sip of that. I thought, oh, this is nice, this really tastes nice. Having no idea that it was the alcohol that was really drawing me, was just the taste of blackberries that I really liked, and being naughty. And so that happened all the time, and I learned to water it down, and so I started to do some of the sneaky things that you do, or that I did and learned as an alcoholic. And I'd water it down, or I'd move the mark that was when she finally realised that someone else was doing it and thought it was my brother, and I was happy for him to get the blame. But when I got into my adolescent years, things started going wrong, as they sometimes do. And I was working in heroin. I had my own money, and I was able to buy alcohol, because back then there was, I'm 56 years of age, so back then there were no restrictions on who could buy it. And I could buy vodka for $4, and I used to hide the bottle down the bush, because we lived near a bush. And I'd go and spend time with my pet duck, who was my confidant, because I had isolated so far away. And he actually turned out to be a drake, but it didn't make any difference. He listened to me. So there was my bottle that I'd sneak down and tell him all my problems, and then go back to the world and go to school and just cruise through life under the radar in my little world of isolation. Well, when I finished school, I started working, and that was a full pay packet. So then came the social life, drinking with my friends at work, and I just thought, well, this is what life's all about. It's supposed to be fun. You need to have a drink to operate. And I was working in a bank. I could smoke over the counter as to the customers. Shortly after that, though, I was drinking behind the counter, and I was only 17 years of age. So I was not tough or anything like that, totally, but I just thought that was the way it's supposed to be. I grew up in beer, rugby and races in my lifestyle when I was a kid, in the 60s, early 60s. Well, it increased from there. So what was a social week of going out Thursday, Friday, Saturday to parties, to discos, and always drink around, increased. And I never thought anything of it. I just thought, well, no, I'm okay. I'm functioning. I can do my job. I can do my work. I can look after friends. And by this stage, I was having children. I have two daughters. And I drank through their childhood. All the time, I would turn up to parent-teacher meetings smelling of alcohol and thinking I was okay because I wasn't paralytic or lying on the floor talking to the teacher. I went to the picture theatres, and behind the door where I was ripping the tickets was a cup full of wine. I eventually ended up resorting to wine because it was the cheapest and it came in big bulk amounts, and I could take the bladder out of the cardboard and squash it into spaces or into a pocket or something like that, and it just got worse and worse and worse. So when I got into my 30s and 40s, that was becoming a real problem. I was going to the hospital at least once a fortnight, once a week on certain times. And I was singing out in the streets at that time, busking to make extra money. And yes, that was to buy alcohol. When I had run out, I thought, well, I can sing some money to get the alcohol. And I did. And if I passed out and was scraped off the sidewalk by the ambulance, or because some nice do-gooder walked past and thought, oh my gosh, that doesn't look very good, that person lying down on the ground with a guitar, I would wake up in hospital and I'd think, well, no, I'm okay, I just had a little bit too much to drink, I'm fine. So this is where the insanity of alcoholism took me. And I was diagnosed with epilepsy. I don't think it was anything to do with that myself, because I've taken myself off the medication and I haven't had seizures. I've only been in recovery following the academy that I actually graduated from for roughly 7 months. But in that time, I realised that the 4 months I was in there, so that's 1 month per decade, my eyes have been woken, well, opened up, and I've woken up to realise that I missed all those magic moments, those spiritual awakenings that happen every single moment of every single day. And I can't look to say, when I see these people at meetings saying, I've been clean for 20 years, for 30 years, and I'm thinking, well, that's impossible. So if I look at that big picture there thing and worry about how I'm going to get to 20 years, I'm going to miss the next 20 seconds. So at the end of each day, which I do thank my Heavenly Father for, and at the beginning of the day I ask him again, can I please have another straight day? And on the way, can you help me to see what magical things, what blessings I are receiving in every single moment of every single day? And he does. And when I go along to AA meetings, and when I listen to people share, and if I'm talking in the street and they tell me their life story, that to me is the most beautiful gift I get, because somebody else is sharing a page of their life with me and allowing me to share a page of my life with them. And to see how they crisscross and how I can relate to so many things that other people who are in recovery have gone through and are going through, and the hopes that it negates any thoughts I ever had, and I have had those thoughts of ending it all. I didn't want to live past 40 years of age. At age 39, my daughter had a child, and I had said to her, don't you make me a grandfather before I'm 40. So what did I do? And I said, oh, well, that's all right, darling, and I celebrated with a drink. And now I'm telling that boy that she had, don't you make me a great-grandfather before I'm 60. Well, I want to be 60 and see that great-grandchild, because I had given up on myself a long time ago and lived in the victim. I spent 40 years of my life living in the victim, blaming everybody else for where I had taken my life and for giving up on life. So I'm so blessed and grateful that a few people in my life, a few influences, and definitely a higher power, didn't let me go as I had given up on everything. And I would love to encourage anybody who's having thoughts of, is it all worthwhile? What am I doing? What's my reason on being here? Just to reach out and talk to somebody else who's been through that, because our stories so line up in different ways. Somebody out there has a story that they can share with you that you're sure your story will align with, because that's what happened with me. And it happens every day. Every time I hear somebody who's in the fellowship share, I think, oh, okay, I could at least glean something from what that person has just told me. Even if instantly I may not like the person, or even if it's somebody that I do know and don't like, when they share their story, if I can have enough respect for myself first by taking the time out to listen to their story, then I'm better off for it. And I'd like to think the same happens when I get to share it with people. So this is where I'm at in my life at the moment, and see, if that's been 7 months, and I have seen more in that 7 months than I did in the 40 years where life was a blur through the bottom of a glass of wine or whatever else I could get my hands on. And might I add, that includes when that was in really dire straits, with blood spirits. So that's how low I sunk with my alcoholism. And I used to joke about it back then. I'd say, oh, gosh, here we go. Time for a prayer. Ask Heavenly Father for another favour. Drag me out of rock bottom, out of this pit I'm in. And then I'd look at it and say, oh, well, it could be worse. It could have been quicksand. And laugh it off and have another drink. So celebrate the fact that I'm, you know, still in my miserable life I'd created for myself. So life at the moment is tough as far as, yep, the temptations are there, the triggers are there, the thoughts are there, but the memory's there to, do I want to be that person lying on the side of the road being scraped up at the taxpayer's expense to be taken off to hospital, wasting a space for somebody who could need it a lot more than I do, and I don't need to be that person, and I have so much going for me in the fact that I've joined the human race again. And that's through, largely, through acknowledging the fact that I am alcoholic. I'm not going to get hung up on that. That's how it is. That is what it is. And that there are a whole lot of people in this fellowship who know that, who understand that, and who are more than willing to give me their time and to offer their time, because they know where it takes, where alcoholism can take you or has taken them. And that, to me, is one huge blessing, and to me comes from up above, saying, yeah, my higher power, thumbs up to him. He's never let me down, so it's my turn now to pay back. And that includes to spend the rest of my life, however long that is. Although I dread doing step 8, I got as far as step 4 with my sponsor And that was, so I got demoted. Every time I turn up, and I've only been seeing him for about 2 months, I find out what my next weekly defect is. But I can laugh about that, and it is a laugh. I say, okay, well, it's my defect this week. So it's come from, you know, judgmental, ungrateful, self-centred. It just gets worse and worse, and I'm thinking, how's that going to look on my CV? One day we might actually get to my attributes, and that will be, yeah, that'll be quite neat. But it's good to hear the blind spots that I've got, and it's great. He's such a wise old man, this my sponsor, and he's talking from 30-plus years of experience of recovery. And the last thing I'd like to share with you is I've been thinking about that since the academy. That was a stepping stone or a springboard for me to spring into this passage, this pathway, this life of recovery. But with that, I like to think that my recovery is a discovery. It's discovering the past that I did let go by unnoticed, because that's what brought me to today. Yesterday's brought me to today, to live today in hopes of tomorrow. And the discovery will be, what's going to happen to me the minute this thing's finished? I don't know. But I'll be clean and I'll be straight to see it and hear it and be blessed by it. So, yeah, my prayer for all of you is God bless you all. And if you ever need to reach out to somebody, look for an alcoholic, because they're there, they've lived it, they know it. And you're going to help them as much as they're going to help you. So, yeah, I'll leave it at that. God bless.
Thanks, Alan. You're listening to Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. Just picking up from the sharing this morning, you know, we are a fellowship of men and women, and we share our experience, strength and hope with each other. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I think that's the thing I picked up on the most. I didn't identify with anything that was around the rooms apart from the stories. And when people started talking about their recovery and their experience with their, you know, with their drinking and what it did to them and where it took them and how they lived without it, I completely identified with that. You know, as it's been said, the isolation, you know, living in a world of one. And I guess for me, a big part of it was the, you know, my drinking. There was such a normality about my drinking. It was a, you know, it was a gradual deterioration of the quality of my life when I drank. You know, it just didn't fall off the edge in one big hit. It was a gradual deterioration, and every time it deteriorated, I'd adjust myself to the conditions of my drinking and, you know, the life that went with it. So when I did get to the end of it, it was quite difficult, because there was a sense of normality. I knew it wasn't right, and I knew things had to change, but there was a sense of normality that we were there. That's how I lived, you know? And I struggled with that for a long time. But eventually, you know, the booze went, and I was left with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, they couldn't stop me from drinking, but they were telling me about how to stop drinking, how they lived their lives without the booze. And that was a completely different arena for me, because, you know, as it's been shared this morning, I was left there, the emotional carnage of my living was huge. I couldn't cope. I couldn't cope with people, I couldn't cope with myself, I couldn't cope with anything. And so the only thing I had was just these raging emotions. And over time I realised that, you know, the booze kind of took the top off all that, you know. It mellowed me out. It made life palatable. So without the booze, I was just left with all this stuff. And I found a way to deal with that in Alcoholics Anonymous, like many other people have had. So this brings us to the end of our meeting. Thank you for listening. We'll be back here again next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM. If you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz. And or you can phone 0800 AA Works, and that will put you in contact with an AA member in the local area. So we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Community Access, radio every way you want it. on planetaudio.org.nz.
The Auckland Art Deco Society.